hosts, Matthew Dawkins, and I am joined today by Dixie Cochran.
Hello.
And Eddie Webb.
Yo.
That's my line.
We're going back to the yo's. I quite like this. This episode is going to be a little strange compared to our usual ones because it's a recording, a pre-recording of our panel at Gen
Matthew,
Con, one of our
Matthew,
panels.
Matthew, mm-hmm. All our episodes are recordings. Every
yes,
single episode
none of them
is
are
a recording.
My God.
In fact, this one is a live one, almost. Kind of.
I've been mistaken all along. I thought we were just transmitting live. That's why I've been so professional and so dedicated to not repeating myself or flubbing or saying or like my co-host.
Or talking over anybody.
Yeah. Well, we all know that the audience is here for me. And... Okay, well, all right, let's start again. Welcome to the Onyx Podcast. My name is Matthew Dawkins. Screw those other two. We're here to listen to some recordings from Gen Con, from
Gen
our
Con.
What's Up with Onyx Path panel. Gen Con, indeed. Gen Con. We're here to, if we're going to be musical about it. We ran a couple of panels of What's Up with Onyx Path, if I can say the fucking word. And... It's been a long week. We're back from Gen Con. It was great fun. It was a fantastic little adventure. A bit of an endurance exercise for some of us with the travel. Yeah. And of course, it's always rather exhausting. But at the same time, it's always great fun too. We'll be having a separate episode where we recap our personal thoughts on Gen Con, unless I'm very much mistaken.
I think
nope,
we are.
You're not mistaken. In this case, you're not mistaken.
Well, in that case, I feel glad that I don't come across as a bumbling fool. Instead, this... episode will just be around our What's Up with Onyx Path panel. Now, there's something you need to know, and that's the audio quality isn't everything that you're used to from this fantastic podcast of ours. We were restricted to using the microphones on our phones, voice recorders, and placing them on tables in strategic places trying to pick up all of our voices. For the most part, we've managed to pick up Eddie's voice, Dixie's voice, my voice, and Rich's voice, and I think even Matt McElroy's voice. But sometimes there are questions from the audience that don't come through terribly clearly. My hope is that you can understand from our answers what those questions were, but if not, turn your volume up, crank it up loud, and try it like a mystery game, like a sort of game of Sherlock Holmes consulting detective.
Yeah.
Work out what we're talking
about. You deduced the question from the answer.
Also, my caveat for this episode is that I had lost my voice like twice by this time, so if I don't sound the way you're all used to me sounding, that's why.
I have no caveats. Everything was perfect and nothing went wrong.
Yeah.
You are a paragon of humanity, Eddie.
I am something, that is for sure.
So the kinds of things you can look forward to in this episode, we'll be talking a little about the announcements of new releases upcoming, such as the Legend Lore RPG, Chicago by Night, upcoming Exalted releases, Chronicles of Darkness releases such as Innocence and Mummy the Curse 2nd Edition. All kinds of books, far and wild, and you may even hear the voices of John Sneed, Steve Kenson, Danielle Lauzon, and Dave Brookshaw. If you listen, and Neil Price. How could we forget Neil? And Neil Price, who speaks lovingly about both Scion and Exalted.
We didn't forget Neil. You forgot Neil.
I forgot you,
all
Neil.
You, Matthew.
And I regret nothing.
He does listen to this podcast, you know.
I forgot.
Oh, this is
the
podcast?
And...
Salubri are awful.
I thought this was going out live. Anyway, let's cut to the panel, and I hope it isn't. I hope the quality isn't too dreadful. We will catch up immediately after. Don't strain your voice again, Dixie.
So I'm Rich Thomas, founder and creative director of Onyx Path Publishing, and we're going to do something a little different than we did last time. I'm going to introduce folks, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the sort of the stuff that we're doing that's not specifically about games, and then I'm going to leave. So, love you all. What we basically have is, it's been a great year for Onyx Path. We're really, really happy so far, I guess. Great year since Gen Con last year. We have made a bunch of changes internally. Most of them were ones that we planned for, and then we wanted to sort of change how we were doing our development process. We were working off a model from way, way, way back that we used at White Wolf back in the day, Evolve 1. And we discovered that with the way we do things versus White Wolf, where everybody was sort of in a big, nasty-looking office with walls all painted black and candles everywhere.
Hey, you got a candle?
Yeah.
You haven't seen my office.
Well, that's that's the point. Is we don't see each other's offices. We are all in different parts of the world, and so it's a very different thing. And our developers, our artists, our writers, all the same way, all over the place. And so we had to sort of adapt how we do the development process. And one of the things that we did is we brought in Eddie and Dixie and Matthew as sort of ad hoc developers to help the other developers hire writers, keep on target. Because what we realized is that while we said a developer does this and this and this and this and this, like say there's a dozen things a developer does. They hire writers, but they also do contracts, and they also have to maintain the vision of the lines, and they have to interface with Merciful Mike Cheney and all that sort of stuff. Not every developer is capable or really has the time on a freelance basis to cover all of those bases. So we provide the missing pieces with these talented people here. Matthew, the Uber developer, if you will, or the Uber developer.
Oh, yeah, we don't use that word anymore.
No, jeez. From TDD and Sean. World of Darkness. Matthew oversees the World of Darkness. We've worked with folks like Senator Phil Mercado and Rich Dansky and our many other wonderful people on those lines. Dixie handles the Exalted team, which is centralized on a Slack channel, which is really smart.
Yeah.
All the conversations go through there. And Chronicles of Darkness. And then it handles sort of story path, 5e stuff, any other crazy idea we come up with. First, he keeps an eye on it, keeps it rolling. Matt handles our fiction efforts, and it's just in general the operations manager. So he pulls all the pieces together, all what they're working on, makes it a semi-coherent whole, I guess. Or you make it a coherent whole, and I make it semi-coherent again. We brought on a friend of ours, James Bell, to handle the Kickstarters. He's been handling the Kickstarters since January. And if any of you have backed our Kickstarters, and if not, I'm pretty sure you've seen a pretty big difference in how our Kickstarters are being run since James took over, because he's full-time doing that. And that's really what Kickstarter requires, particularly the amount that we do, because we have so many different game lines. And finally, just a little bit after the beginning of the year, Rose Bailey talked to us, and it was very obvious that she had an enormously fertile game design mind, but she was really not able to put any of these game designs into form and actually get them out there so people could play them. Thought about them a lot. And she said, look, if I don't do this now, I don't. I gotta do it. And so she resigned in order to do that, and all our folks here stepped up, and Dixie got some extra stuff from that.
Extra stuff.
So that's kind of been the changes. Like I said, there's plenty of info in the brochure. What we're going to do here is hit the highlights ourselves.
They love it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I use it much. I do it. But one of the things I want to talk about before I hand it off to everybody else is that one of the things we do that it's not game design, game world creation specifically. It's more about our world, our real world. Is we work with some groups that are trying to use role playing as a way to help people. In particular, the Ladonna group, which I've mentioned a lot of times on the Monday notes and stuff, they are a group of therapists who are trying to use all kinds of games, tabletop gaming, specifically role playing, to help it with their therapeutic efforts. And it tied in, when I was first talking to them, it really tied into a lot of things I heard anecdotally. I'm sure a lot of us have about how.
You get jokes that are funny.
From role playing games, I learned how to talk in a crowd. In role playing games, I just acquired who I was by being able to role play through these things. And so I thought it was really, really a very great mission that they were on. And they're very nice to be part of their board of directors earlier this year. And so we've been able to follow that. And they're working on several projects that we will hopefully be able to help them with, including.
I was asked to be a consultant for a project with a company called iThrive to work on to ask if they could use Pugmire as a basis for a game system specifically around therapeutic use. And we had a couple guys from iThrive that can talk more about Critical Strengths Engine. So you guys could chat about that?
Can't jump too hard with the kilt on.
We'd all get a cheat,
but I won't.
You see, stop cheering
right now.
So my name is Sean. I work with iThrive Games. I'm a producer with them.
I'm Matt Robbie. I'm developing the system.
Yeah, and so iThrive, our core mission as a nonprofit games company is to enhance pro-social outcomes for teenagers through video games. However, we were at a conference, back in January, and my creative director's son was just kind of like watching everyone work on games, game jamming, doing these things. He's like, you know, what if we made a game that was like, it was like an RPG, but instead of like strength and wisdom, we did compassion and kindness. And she just kind of like, her head blew up, and she's like, that's amazing and so intuitive, and you're a cool kid. And then he did some sort of fart joke. But we went back and we started workshopping it, and what we came up with was the Critical Strengths Engine, which we announced on Thursday. We've been in the first exposure playtest hall, playtesting it all half this week, and it's been going amazingly well, and it is a great place to, as you were saying, engage in a fantasy where instead of having strength or no strength, it's having the ability to go through tasks that require the challenge you internally. And it is, I think, great for people that don't have any sort of huge deficit. And at the same time, we're hoping to use it for therapeutic use where people can work through problems that they have. And I realize I took all that. Would you like to say anything?
You covered it beautifully. We're looking at it, as you said, a dual-use system for people to help work through their own issues therapeutically, and also specifically to see the world through the eyes of someone else. If you're dealing with someone who maybe can't plan, can't kind of process the ability to forward think so well, what is that like? What does living says like that say? And so we're designing the system to be a very kind of rules-light narrative system for that purpose.
And so I've been consulting with them along with Jack from Bahagana Group to both the game design perspective and also the how using the therapeutic setting session. And then once they play test it and stabilize it, then I'm going to be helping them write a Pugmire module so that people can play in the world of Pugmire and also use the tenets of be a good dog and whatnot to play into the emotional things that this game is really strongly based on. So.
And actually, just in playtesting, it's been, not that it wasn't already a great place to immerse emotionally, just because of how wonderful dogs are as companions to humans, but it's, as a fiction to engage, we've been watching, like, people are just like, yes, because now it's not as directly tied to my human emotions.
Right.
And it's easier to kind of let that go, so that's been wonderful.
Oh, good, excellent.
Yeah, perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. So, like I said,
this is sort of the stuff that is part of the art of what we do. This is part of helping people and improving overall the world, we hope, in our tiny little way that we can do it, in addition to all of the many, many game worlds and settings and game design that I know you want to hear about and have questions about. So I am going to say adios, amigos.
Okay.
And catch you all on another time. Thank you so
Bye,
much.
Rich. Bye, Rich. Bye, Rich.
Now we're in charge.
I do that every week.
I know. And I never stop loving it. So a couple more things about Onyx Path as a whole before I hand it off to start talking about the individual chunks that we're all responsible for. In addition to finding new ways to engage with our community, we're also trying to find new ways to engage with our audience. So we're looking into things like getting our projects up into Amazon, particularly the fiction stuff. You want to talk more about that process?
Yeah, a lot of our fiction, when we launch it, it's available in multiple formats on Drive-Thru Fiction, but we discovered that a lot of our audience likes to read on their phone, so we started putting in the fiction anthologies on the Kindle and the Nook, and we're also exploring iBooks and a few other markets right now, and White Wolf is also putting fiction up, so having that synergy with all of the vampire fiction available on the Kindle is a nice... benefits the audience in both companies.
Absolutely. And you've also been helping us with trying to get things into gaming stores again, into distribution through like Studio 2 and the like.
Yep. And we're looking at a fiction distributor specifically to get into bookstores that doesn't necessarily buy RPGs, so we can hit... Studio 2 is really focused on games.
Right.
So their strength is marketing our books and our card games, and I'm looking for a distribution partner. I've got had a couple meetings here at the show that are specifically books for bookstores as well.
So. Nice, absolutely. So I mean, that's one thing is trying to get things out to more people in the places that you're buying them. I know we've also for years heard people going, I love seeing the books in stores, and so with Pugmire and with other Kickstarter this week games, that we're trying to get more and more of that happening. And like you said, Studio 2 has been a great partner because they really get what we're trying to do.
As well as Indie Press Revolution.
Yes.
A lot of our Kickstarter books, when we have extra copies, we've now given them to Indie Press Revolution so retail stores can buy direct from them. And now we're putting Pugmire and upcoming games like Cavaliers of Mars through both channels as well.
And also trying to get the community more opportunities to do what they like as well. So we've been just watching the great success of Storytellers Vault that White Wolf's putting together. And so we started our own programs. Pugmire has now Canis Minor, so that people can make their own Pugmire products and sell them to other Pugmire fans. And in fact, I need to talk to you after shows. We can start making some more opportunities available to people.
Absolutely.
I got some great feedback from people who want to do more with that. And so I think we can find ways to give you guys more room to play in the Pugmire world with Canis Minor. We've also launched for Scarlet Lands, Slorisium. Is it Slorisium?
Slorisium.
You should roll your
Slorisium Vaults. So that you can do 5e or Pathfinder content for Scarlet Lands and again, play that world and do more with that. And then also to get more people talking, digging deeper into information and the like. Dixie, Matthew, and I have started the Onyx Pathcast, which is our now weekly podcast, where we...
Rich made us.
Yeah, Rich forced us...
We were forced to go weekly.
On the air to go weekly.
Horrible.
So we don't have any chemistry, we don't get on.
I was terrified.
I was locked in a cupboard, it was horrible. But no, it's every week, either three of us talking about a particular game, or what it's like to be a freelancer, or how we do business, or we're bringing people on the interviews to talk about how they work with our projects, what it's like to be in the industry, and just them as people. There's a lot of overlap between us as people and us as making products, and so we want to dig into some of that muddy ground as three of us, and really enjoy that more.
The Pathcast has been great fun. It's been one of the most popular Pathcasts we've done, and I just want to mention this because it's something... fairly self-aggrandizing, but I recommend people check it out. We did a deep dive on Vampire the Requiem about a month and a half ago, and the feedback from that Pathcast alone has been fantastic. The people who have had a chance to look at Requiem from a perspective they never had before, there was obviously a fair degree of community hang-ups over Requiem. There still is, to a degree. And that particular episode helped disabuse a lot of notions about it. So I recommend, if you've not checked out our podcast, please do give it a listen. Give that episode a listen for a good idea of the kind of things we talk about and our various different approaches to the games we work on, because I can listen back to that one and I hate listening to myself. So.
You have a grating, high-pitched voice.
I do have a very irritating voice, I know.
I'm trying for wrestling reference now, almost by instinct at this point.
Oh, we need a wrestling reference. Woo! Okay. Woo! So, onto the World of Darkness. Obviously, the World of Darkness has been very prominent at this Gen Con with the big release of Vampire 5th Edition. Well done, White Wolf. Selling gangbusters, as they said once upon a time. And we are...
No,
did no one ever say that?
Anymore.
Okay. Cake busters. Ooh. I like the sound of that. We at Onyx Path are also involved in the V5 journey because we will be releasing Chicago by Night for Vampire the Masquerade 5th edition. It was announced this Gen Con, or I guess slightly before with the brochure release, but that's gone down a storm. We've been receiving a hell of a lot of positivity about that. And something I wanted to talk about, and apologies if you've heard this before, but I think it's something that's definitely worth championing in any of our games, is how diverse we are building Chicago by Night. The team we've put together to write on this book consists of Misha Bouchiega, Kieran McGran, Jiba Mole Anderson, Alan Turner, Eddie Webb, John Burke, Rachelle Udell, any award winner Chris Spivey. Yes, we love you, Chris.
Triple Annie Award winner.
Any award winner, Crystal Mazer, because I believe she won last night as well.
She did.
Good
she
God,
did.
It's an all-star cast. We couldn't have planned this better, could we?
we didn't plan
that. Yeah, that rigging the Ennies really worked. Lauren Roy, Malcolm Shepherd, Miranda Callis, and Jose Garcia. And you may not recognize all of those names. A lot of them come from different avenues of our industry, but they all bring a wealth of experience from different cultures, different backgrounds, different genders, different races, and that has really helped because Chicago is an incredibly diverse city. It's a city I love. I love visiting it. And it was very important to us that we get Chicago natives on the book as well. The idea behind Chicago by Night is, of course, it is the, I guess, prototypical Vampire the Masquerade city. And it needs representation of every single clan and every single agenda of anyone who might have been made a vampire in that city. So as well as the massive cast of characters we have a big exploration of the back streets and urban legends of Chicago within it. We also tie in some of the excellent things that V5 is introducing, like lore sheets, coterie mechanics, and so on. It's been great fun to develop this book. We've been doing it in secret for a couple of months now, so we're fairly far along. And we will be kickstarting it in a couple of months with a bit of luck and a good wind. So, as my naval family used to say.
Nobody says that.
No. Save questions until the end, Daniel. It's we're very excited for the direction V5 goes in, and so we're looking to enjoy it. We want it to reach all of our established fans and get a taste of what Onyx Path will bring to that table. So, shall we go straight on to Mage?
Yeah, first chunks are yours, second chunks are hers, and third chunks are mine.
Okay, well, there you go. There is organization behind all of this chaos. So, Mage is a fairly big deal, Mage of the Ascension. A lot of people enjoy that to an almost cult-like degree.
No one should ever say that again.
This is going to be the least usable recording. I am one
of those cultists. There you go, I saved it.
Okay.
I'm not the high priest, that's Phil.
It's going to be an article. It's going to be an article in 2 weeks about you being a cultist.
All praise the satyr. Mage 20, we have a number of big releases coming out. We've changed some things up because with the number of big releases that are coming up with Mage 20, including the Book of the Fallen, which of course handles all the icky, very, very dark material that Mage has been known for from time to time, Phil's attention has been largely focused on doing that and getting it right. So Guide to Technocracy he will also be developing, but Victorian Mage, he is taking on a consulting role. He will still advise on all matters, meta plot, direction of Mage and so on, but the developers, well, at least one of the developers, the other one I don't believe we can confirm yet, at least until a contract is signed, but one of the developers of the Victorian Mage book will be our very own Dixie Cochran. Who has a wealth of knowledge regarding the Victorian era, and a lot of people are very excited for that book. So we're developing multiple Mage of the Ascension books at the same time, because some are at first draft stage, some are in red line, some are in final draft, so it's a nice wave of Mage that's coming. And we also have Wraith 20 and Changeling 20. Wraith 20 is ticking along quite happily with Book of Oblivion. We've got a lot of our friends working on that book. I'm developing it with Bruce Bohr, who is an old hand from White Wolf in days gone by. He's a fantastic colleague, just to say that now, and the enthusiasm he has brought to this project has been wonderful to see. And Changeling 20's Player's Guide is also ticking along, and the team on that are completely dedicated to Changeling. The two developers, Luca Carroll and Pete Woodworth, put together a fantastic team on that too, and you can really tell because that's a final draft and I've been watching it as it goes. It's just a beautiful book and I think it will serve a lot of Changeling fans very well. Shall we move on to Chronicles?
We can.
In that case you can have the paper.
My turn. I got a paper. I will apologize in advance. I lost my voice a little bit last night. It's getting a little better, but I'm probably going to talk a lot less on this one than the last two panels. And if you can't hear me or if my voice cracks, I'm sorry.
I apparently do a very good Dixie impression.
Do you?
According to Eddie.
That's not what I said. What I used.
So, of course, with Chronicles of Darkness, we have a million game lines. The only two things that are on here are a couple of cool, more announcement-type things. So I'll go ahead and do this first. And if we want to talk at the end about some of the other lines, we can. I know that there was a lot of buzz. A lot of people were really into our first Innocence book for, you know, what was then New World of Darkness. Where we play kids, World of Darkness, very cool, but it has to be handled pretty sensitively. So to develop that, we brought on Jason Blair from Little Fears. A lot of y'all probably know who he is. He's fantastic. We've had a few talks about that. A lot of the moods we're going for since the first one has come out, we've had things like Stranger Things that now exist. We have things like Coraline, we have the Graveyard Book, we have a whole lot of really cool inspiration going into it. So hopefully it'll still be hard, it'll still be creepy, it'll still be everything that we want it to be, but handled with a deft hand. We don't have writers on that yet, so I'll be announcing that writer list eventually, and I'm very excited for that because I've got some cool ideas. We also announced at our last panel, we are working on Mummy the Curse 2nd edition. It's been asked for. It's another one that kind of needed to be poked and molded a little bit from the first edition because the first one was so heavily influenced by the developers at the time and by their knowledge of Egyptian mythology and all that. That's not something that Chronicles of Darkness really does now. We want our games to be a little bit more toolboxy, a little bit more friendly with the other lines. So we're changing a few things, and I will let you talk about that this time to save my voice.
Oh, okay.
We are developing that together, by the way.
So in a lot of ways, Mummy the Curse First Edition resembled the development of Orpheus for World of Darkness of old. You may remember that game. In a lot of senses, it's a complete game. Each book adds something new that helps you expand the original core material, as it should, but it kind of exists on its own. It didn't have much crossover, cross-pollination with the other Chronicles of Darkness games. Mummy the Curse 2nd Edition, and I'll talk about some of the things we didn't talk about in the last panel. It's called the Timeless Chronicle. And this is something a lot of people have really enjoyed the idea of, that mummies essentially exist on a flat circle of time. They are deathless, they are also lifeless, and they are also timeless. And it helps explain away the experience points conundrum, which may sound like an odd thing, but when you create characters for Mummy, you're creating starting level characters in 2018. You've been around for several thousand years. So that doesn't make a great deal of sense unless you realize the next awakening they experience is 1,500 years prior. And then the next one is 500 years in the future. Now, they're not conscious of being time travellers. They're not time travellers. They exist at all points. That is their consciousness that is whizzing between their different forms, because they still wake up with no memory. You don't suddenly know how to drive a Lamborghini in 500 CE because the last time you were awake, you were in a Lamborghini. But about, I don't know, a year into your awakening, just as you're descending and your memory is going up, you're suddenly starting to get snatches of the realities you've experienced, the futures you've experienced, and you can bring that to bear with your character, who of course starts with godlike power, but ends with godlike knowledge as their memory goes up. The other thing we're introducing with Mummy Second Edition, which has proven a lot of fun to brainstorm, is making the cults more interactive, making your putting your cults at tiers. So,
like the mage cult?
Mm-hmm, yeah, the mage cult. Satyr will be in the book, maybe. But the cults now in Mummy the Curse Second Edition, you could look at them as tier one cultists are your average mortals who worship your mummy and are going to summon it from the tomb. Tier 2 cultists are likely to be your sorcerer cultists, who were introduced in Dark Era's Companion. They were alluded to in a great deal in Mummy the Curse and only finally detailed in the Dark Era's Companion. Tier 3 are going to be your World of Darkness Immortals. If any of you are familiar with the New World of Darkness Immortals book that had things like Bloodbathers, Eternals, Visitors from other dimensions or times and space, they are going to be in Mummy the Curse Second Edition as potential cultists. And then you have your Tier 4, which is your Sadiq, your permanent servant, who rises and falls with you. The reason you have these tiers, and then we'll move on to another game, I'm just very excited about this,
yep,
is you can now use your cultists as, I guess, a form of phylactery for your powers, your pillars. Mummies use pillars of shadow, of spirit, of various elements that make them what they are. You can store your pillars in your cultists. You can still use them, and your cultists can use them up to the level of their tier. So if it's a mortal, they can only use one dot powers of whatever pillar is inside them. So your cultists are suddenly, they have agency in the game as playable characters. On top of that, though, if your mummy somehow ends up destroyed beyond recognition, you can then take over one of the cultists that's housing one of your pillars, because they've got you inside them. So you just take over their body. That is now your form. So we're creating this troop-style play. It existed in Mummy the Curse First Edition, and I had a great deal of fun with it, playing it and running it. But now we're making it a more dynamic experience.
Yeah, it's just going to be a lot more fun if you're playing as just one mummy and a bunch of cultists, because the cultists will have access to a lot more to do, essentially. So you can do it that way. You can play as, you know, a whole group of mummies. That's fine, too. You have all kinds of options with that. But we're trying to just make the options a little more open, kind of like how in, you know, you can run a one-person game of Promethean, and you can run a several-person game of Promethean. You can all play Prometheans, and you can play other characters that interact with them. And so we're just trying to make it, you know, like I said, friendly for that style of play.
Well, and the big question we've not answered yet is vampires. So the immortals, who are these tier three cultists, consider themselves flawed immortals. They see mummies with their sakem and their godlike power as the perfect immortals, despite the curse in the name. So where do kindred fall into this? Are they flawed immortals, like bloodbathers and the rest? Can you make vampires from Vampire the Requiem your cultists that you can inhabit at some point? We need to think about that with our writing team, see how workable it is, but we definitely want more crossover between Mummy and the other games. So we'll see where that goes.
Awesome. Thank you for talking.
I got it now.
You're already interrupting me.
Yeah, I'll just leave.
All right, so I'm not going to talk too much about the other Chronicles lines. I talked about them more in the last panel. Most of what is going on with them you can see via the Monday meeting blog. If we have questions at the end, I can talk more about some of them. You know, everybody knows, like, Changeling's coming out soon. We're excited about that. We have all kinds of cool stuff happening. I am going to move on to Exalted. So there's a bunch of people now. You know, we had some changeover with the team shortly before I came out with Exalted. I don't know how many Exalted fans we have here, even. I could be just talking to myself. Oh, hey, cool. At least some people here. All right, cool. So we had some changeover, and when I came in February and I took over, I've been really trying to hire some new writers, streamline the team, because we can put out more books than one at a time. Because that is a problem with some of our lines, and especially with Exalted, is that you really have to have this deep dive knowledge to be able to work on it. So we have, you know, 20, 30 writers that have that deep dive knowledge, and then we put them all on a book, and then we go, now he's going to write the other books. That's an open problem. So we've been hiring some new folks. We actually have two books in development right now. So, of course, Lunar Things at the Gate, I know a lot of people have heard about, we talked about, that will be kickstarted probably early next year. So, yay, Lunars, very excited. Yeah. So great. Yeah, Lunars, we're already working very hard on Heirs of the Shogunate, which was the Kickstarter companion book. That book ended up being way bigger than I think they even expected when we started it, because often our Kickstarter companion books go between, you know, 30, 50, maybe 100,000 words. This one went up to like 150,000 because people just kept backing and we kept going, cool, we'll add more charms. I've got people that want to just write charms as hobbies forever. Their name is Robert Vance.
Yeah, so a digression. On the way here, the announcer on the plane talked about infinite arms, but I heard it as infinite arms. And as I posted on Twitter, Rob Vance was already running a charm attack. So. So you are absolutely correct.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, so we got that going on. We've also got a couple other little setting books that we've pitched. So I'm not going to announce them yet because they haven't been accepted. But we do have, I think, 4 book pitches just went in for this. So it's not like we're holding back. After Lunars, the next big book will be Exigence, Out of the Ashes. That's your build your own Exalt book. Really, really cool. There's some other really cool stuff going in there as well. I'm very excited for that. Last time I had Megan talk about it, I'm not going to ask you to talk because you talk too much. That was Sunil Price.
You never stop.
Who could talk about this, but I won't let him.
He'll have a chance to talk in a minute.
Yeah, I know. I see the next thing on the list.
Right.
And then after that, our next planned fat splat is Sidereals. I know a lot of people are Sidereals fans. I'm a huge Sidereals fan. They're my favorite. I am very type A and picky, and therefore, I'm definitely bureaucracy type. But past that, I've got a list of about 18 books that they want to do. So it's not something that we're stopping on. We're actually picking up momentum. The more writers we get to hire, the more people we can train up into new developers, the more books we can be making at one time. It is possible, and it's something that we hope to happen, that eventually it will be at least, you know, 3 books at a time, 3 books a year, possibly more than that. So you're going to see some really cool Exalted stuff coming out soon.
And Dixie's helped me get the Exalted novels back on track.
Yes, which are actually really good.
It's been amazing.
Yeah, no, I'm excited about that. We're also going to be working on the Dragonblooded novellas that were promised during the Dragonblooded Kickstarter soon. So, and I'm taking over on some of those just because we want to work closely with the Exalted team on them to make sure that they are canon, they are fun, they are everything that Exalted fans actually want out of fiction, as opposed to assigning them to somebody who can't communicate with the developers and therefore can't ask questions. So it might not always be Exalted writers writing them. We're, you know, we always try to bring in cool talent, exciting voices, new voices. But we will be making sure that they have access, be able to ask any questions they need, make sure everything fits within creation, you know, as it should. So, yeah. How about that?
Yeah. And moving on to...
No pressure. They're building you up.
This recording is going to be amazing and not at all problematic to edit.
Eddie edits all of our podcasts, yes. By the way. What you don't know is how much crap he has to remove.
That's all your lines, really. It just makes things so much smoother if I just cut your track entirely.
Yeah, everyone said, you speak a lot less now in the later podcasts, and it's because of him.
Luckily, I no longer live next to the fire station, police station, and school. I used to live next to when we were recording, and I was muting constantly, sirens all the time.
As Rich mentioned, I handle kind of the story path games and all of the other licensed games that we're working on. One of the ones that we're very excited about coming out soon is Scion. Onyx Path owns the rights to Scion. We got those when we formed the company. And it's been a long road, but Neil, our line developer, has helped us get things going. So, you want to talk a little bit about Origin of the Hero?
Sure. So we ran a pretty successful Kickstarter for Scion, for Origin Hero. And then, we were in the midst of putting finalizing the drafts and putting everything together. And the Trinity team really went full steam ahead on Trinity Continuum and Core. And Danielle Lazon was the mechanics developer on Trinity, and she'd been telling me what to do with my system since the start of it, and I had ignored her, and then, of course, when she got hold of it, she made it infinitely better. And so I had to eat the biggest crow, two of them, to make it mythologically accurate, and admit that Danielle had made a much better system, and so I had to kind of re-engineer a lot of Scion to incorporate.
So wait, why did we hire Danielle instead of you?
You know what?
Shrug emoji. Thanks.
This is going to be a good podcast.
So there has been a delay on it, but the books definitely show the work, and we're running demos of it at the booth. Stop by and ask me anything about it. Right now we're pretty much full steam ahead on the Scion Companion. I pitched another couple of books at the hero level, but Eddie really wants me. right into outlining Demigod.
Yep.
And moving on there. We want to do a lot of different things in Demigod. Some things that are kind of expansions on stuff that's happened with other games in the industry about planning out entire character arcs at a time. Mm-hmm. And something else I really want to do with it is a couple things that we haven't done in Onyx Path or White Wolf games in years. So different styles of play, incorporating them in there and incorporating them into the base style of play. So I wanted Demigod to be much more than Hero Plus. I want it to almost feel like almost like a different game, but not quite, as more of a natural expansion of your characters to a higher level. There's a couple other books I pitched, but yep. We'll talk about them.
But I do want to definitely reiterate, we joke about this stuff, but Scion was always going to be a tricky game. It's our first story path game. It was a game that had some flaws in the beginning, and then also the cultural environment has changed in the past 10 years since I was initially launched. So there's a lot of things that were very difficult to navigate, on top of helping with Danielle and others to build a whole new system. So Neil really helped us to kind of land that, and we've seen the proofs of origins, back to the proof of origins. I really do think it's going to be a really fantastic game. So thank you so much.
Even though Danielle didn't do it.
Moving on to the other Onyx Path owns property is Trinity Continuum. Again, this was originally a White Wolf game that we brought in-house, that now Onyx Path completely owns, and this is the Aeon, Aberrant Adventure groups. And first we'll talk about Aeon. So John, do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on with Aeon? This is John Sneed, our Aeon developer. Should do that soon.
So, had a quite successful Kickstarter, and part of that was a bunch of stretch goals. They're going to be this thing called the Aeon expansion that's just, there are supplements planned and, approved and everything, but this is just a bunch of fill-in stuff that, the book was already huge. There was only so much that would fit in there. This is the stuff mostly that I wanted to fit in, like rules for Vargs, the mecha kind of things. And, those are going in, a bunch of other things. It's pretty much done. I mean, I've got a couple final drafts to get in, and then we're moving on with development on that. So, that's going really well, and I've got... Can I talk about
it? Yeah, talk about the books. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, and then immediately after that will be the space book, which, there was a fair amount of material on different worlds and stuff in the core book. Anyone back to the Kickstarter has seen the PDF. But now there'll be more. New worlds. Rules for playing Chen characters. So, one of my dreams for when I was working on the game way back in the past was, playable aliens. And, you're going to have, in that book, playable aliens. Allies of humanity, so it's really easy to integrate them into a story. Or, also there'll be stuff about, you want to play, whole campaign of your slugs and human suits. Go for it.
And who doesn't really? Come on.
And just a bunch of unexplored worlds that All the ones in the core book are worlds that have already been visited, and you can find out more about them. This is like, you know, all right, nobody has seen this world. Your, you know, characters with your teleporter or, you know, your Leviathan jump ship. All right, here you go. First contact, you know, mostly not with sentience, a little bit of that. But, you know, you're the first humans on this planet. Cool. What's there?
Thank you very much. So now that we're full steam ahead on Aeon, Aeon's going well, we're now moving on to the next step, which is Aberrants. And we've been blessed to work with Steve Kenson, who's developed every superhero game you've played in the past 10 years. So should you go talk a little bit about what you're doing with Aberrant?
Sure. I'll stand rather than stumble Fair enough. Over everybody. Hi, I'm Steve. So Aberrant is probably the Trinity Continuum game that is closest to the present day as compared to Eric Munition to the core book. And as I imagine folks are aware, there have been some changes in superhero media in, say, the last 10 years or so. And so Aberrant is definitely going to reflect a lot of those changes. The first edition of Aberrant very much came out of sort of the deconstructionist, you know, comics trend in the late 80s, early 90s. And the new edition of Aberrant is focusing very strongly on the notion of people who are suddenly given tremendous power, who really do and you know, have the ability to change the world in a lot of different ways. And a lot of them really sincerely believe that they can fix things. And it's going to be, as pretty much everyone in the Aeon era knows, the best of intentions, right? So there's going to be a lot more in Aberrant about those best intentions, really. And there's going to be a very hopeful start to things. Then we'll see.
So. And we also have other plans for Trinity. We're not going to talk about them completely yet, but something I can talk a little bit about is the fact that we're not just doing the three. There will be other products and other eras for the Trinity Continuum. It is a continuum, it's not just three poles. But we're going to leave that for a little bit later. So let's move on to Cavaliers of Mars. That is Rose Bailey's Create Your Own game. As Rich mentioned, that even though Rose is no longer inside the company, we still have a great relationship with her. She's still very excited about finishing up Cavaliers of Mars. The actual core book is very close to done. It is at the printer, going to the printer?
Printing right now.
Yeah, it's printing right now. Printing. Okay, so it's very close to being released, so soon be in your hands. You've been patiently waiting for it. And Rose is right now working on two more supporting books for our stretch goals. There's Witch Queen of the Shadowed Citadel, which is a new scenario. And City of the Tower Tomb is a setting book for a thing. And you're working on which one, right?
Rose? I am. Or Rose.
Dixie, sorry.
I was Rose last year. I don't remember.
Yeah, you were Rose last year. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I am. I'm writing the kind of introduction to it, more of the setting bit.
Yeah.
And then Steffi Devan is writing the actual adventure and, like, deeper into it. It takes place in the Labyrinth of Night. If you're a Cavaliers of Mars fan, it's going to be really cool. I think Rose's main instruction to me was this was as close as you could get on Cavaliers to an underwater place.
Ooh.
But it's all in caves. It's nice. All bioluminescent and cool and floral. I'm very excited about writing it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So that's going to be coming out. Those are coming out soon, but the core book is going to be very, very soon.
Yep.
There's very specific times, like soon and eventually. Also, we have another story path game is They Came From Beneath the Sea. Yet again, with Matthew Dawkins. Matthew, you want to talk a little bit about They Came?
So They Came From Beneath the Sea, if you're unfamiliar, is a 1950s era Americana sci-fi B-movie extravaganza. Why not?
It's very long.
Let's add that. Yeah, well, you know, it's difficult to synopsize something so complex. But no, ultimately it's a very simple game. It's like every pulpy B-movie you've ever seen on Mystery Science Theater, where the costumes just aren't quite good enough, the acting is slightly too oaky. And we do have some demos of it running via the Wrecking Crew at the convention, and we're running it at the booth as well. I've got a mini scenario called Crabs! Exclamation mark. Which you are more than welcome to come along and have a go at. The general idea behind They Came From is that it's everything wonderful about the B-movies. You can make it as comedic or as horrific as you like. But it's a game that embraces the meta that most games shy away from. So you as the players have... Stop that, you. So you as the players actually have meta qualities like cinematics, where you can actually change the direction of the game by playing a cinematic card or choosing one from the pool in the middle of the table, such as Cheap Set. So let's say you are trapped in an underwater prison or a submarine prison, and the were-lobsters have imprisoned you in there. You don't know what you're going to do. You use Cheap Set. You just punch through the wall and walk on through.
The whole back wall just falls down.
Yeah. I've actually, because I was looking for these last time, and I realized I had them in my All Rolled Up, by the way. If you've not got an All Rolled Up, it's not by Onyx Path, but they are very good. Very helpful for the traveling role player. We have things like the Cheap Set cinematic. We have bad dubbing. Bad dubbing's very good for if your characters are spying on some aliens and you don't know what they're saying, the players can just take over and say what they're saying. But... So, you know, that could lead to all kinds of interesting things. It can certainly frustrate the director, the storyteller. You've got kill the extra. If there's an attack coming towards one of your characters and you really don't like it, unfortunately, we little Hugo walking along beside you there takes the bullet to the face. And you're kind of obliged to hold him and go, "No, you seal slug bastards, no!" And then... we've got scene missing, so we've got the kinds of things where if you are bound to face certain doom, you can just insert missing scene. King Clam is about to devour all of you. Missing scene, you are somewhere else. And your characters, the players can discuss what happened. The characters never can. They can allude to it. They could, you know, say, "I've never seen someone do that to a clam before," and then just walk off down to the local diner. But you can't ever imply how you got out of that situation. So you've got your cinematics, you have your quips. We're going to be having these on cards. Everyone has these pithy one-liners that may be appropriate, they may not. More often than not, they're not. There's an awful lot of anti-communist sentiment in there because of the era. It's 1950s America. So your quip might be, "Take that, you commie scum." Or it might be, "And I'd sooner be dead than red," as you punch out a gill man. It doesn't make sense, but it's a B-movie. It doesn't have to make sense. So I guess to close on They Came From, because we'll be kickstarting that before the end of the year.
Yep.
It's in editing now.
Yep.
It's a game where we can't dictate to you what's funny, because everyone has different gauges of comedy. But it's a game that provides you with the tools to make it as funny as you need it. You know your players, so make it as farcical and as camp as you want. And we'll see how that does, because we've got lots of ideas for other They Came From games. This is very much the prototype, but as we discussed at last year's panel, you know, if it's wonderful, you can have a They Came From Hammer Horror style one, or They Came From Beyond Midnight. Came From Beyond the Stars. You can have a Goosebumps, Are You Afraid of the Dark? They Came From Beneath My Bed. You know, and you're all playing children or teenagers. But the point is, we can harness lots of media, and lots of genres, with the They Came From line and this kind of mechanic, and it could work really well.
And then the other StarCast game we're doing, as you said, we love StarCast system. We're trying to find a lot of different avenues for it, and it's a very flexible system. So I am working on Dystopia Rising Evolution, which is part of our license agreement with Imagination Nation and Ashton Media. It's a post-apocalyptic game where it's several generations in the future, and it's a rough place where sometimes people die and sometimes they come back. So it's kind of Mad Max meets Walking Dead. There is a force called Grave Mind, so that when people die, and sometimes even when places and things die, the Grave Mind regrows it in a slightly different way. But if you're strong enough willed, if you die, you can kind of work your way through the Grave Mind and come back as somewhat like yourself. So you don't necessarily lose all of your humanity, but there are pieces of you that are gone. And one of the great things about this is we have emotional bonds with people, are actually a stat in the game. So if you've been married to someone for 5 years, and if you die and you come back, you may have your bond of love removed. So you remember being married to that person, but the actual emotion is gone. And it allows for interesting ways to play with what happens with life and death, and also it's a post-apocalyptic game is very much about community. There's a society you're a part of, there's a group you belong to, there's a strain that you come from. So it's very much a game about bonds and connections and cultivations and trying to support and develop communities. And not everyone's going to agree, and communities are going to go to war and cause conflicts. And in the middle of this are also zombies. So there's a lot of how you rebuild society from scraps of what's left behind and when you're in constant danger. So if you just want to have a chainsaw and tear up zombies, the game can absolutely support that. But if you want to go into the ethics and morality of rebuilding a world from scratch, the game also extends to that as well. The manuscript for pre-editing is done. We have it here at the booth. There are some demos happening with the Sophie Rising folks. We're going to bring Kickstarter pretty soon after we get back from Gen Con, like a week or two after we get back from Gen Con. So we're going right into Kickstarter. And we'll see how it goes. So far, the initial commentary has been positive, particularly from the live action group, the Space One. They've been very excited about it. They felt it was very true to the flavor of the world while also polishing off some of the rough edges.
They're actually running the demos in the booth right now.
Oh, fantastic. That's really great. Yeah. So watching people in homemade armor running tabletop games, I just love it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's exciting. We'll see how it goes, but it's definitely at the stage where we're now at the point where we'd love to get feedback and commentary to make sure that we make this the best game, because it's close to stuff we've done before. It feels akin of like a World Darkness Chronicles, but it is actually distinct. It's a very different style of world. And so it's close but new, and I'm excited about that kind of balance of familiar and exciting. Speaking of exciting, Pugmire, my favorite world, because I own it. But we've been very happy about how Pugmire's done the past year since it's formally launched. It's people come up to talk to me how much fun they're having, and so it's wonderful. It's very heartening for me to hear that. So I thank you guys for playing it. Monarchies of Mal, the cat's companion game, is at the printer, so that will also be available very, very soon. And again, people are excited about the changes to the system but also and the world. So, I mean, if you play Pugmire, there's a lot that's familiar there, but there are some tweaks and adjustments to give it its own flavor because cats don't try to be good dogs, they try to be excellent cats. And that's a very different... Yes, they know they're the best. They don't have to have someone else tell them that.
Yeah.
Everyone else has to agree that they are the best. And so that's a slightly different tone, and I'm glad to hear that people feel like Monarchy's hitting that tone well.
Yeah.
We've also recently kickstarted Fetch Quest, which is our card game based on Pugmire. Is a cooperative deck building game. We have some demos again at the booth. We want to give it a test. We're going to be getting final art for that and then putting that in store as well, so that's really exciting. Which means now that all the Pugmire projects are in process, I have to start the next one. So I talked with Rich about this. We had some back and forth. We argued about the title a lot, which we always do, and he wins like he always does. But we're doing Pirates of Pugmire. Which is Adventures on the Acid Sea. Yes, the 7th Sea developer. I'll be talking to you, don't worry. It is a chronicle book that is for both Pugmire and Monarchies of Mal, so it's kind of taking the crossover stuff that's referenced in Mal and expanding on that a bit. Goes into travel, what it's like to sail, all the sailing concerns, how exploration. There's going to be 3 connected adventures, and there's also going to be rules to play a lizard and a bird. So if you ever wanted to play a parrot, which had a parrot on its shoulder, now you can. That's at the pitch phase, pretty much everything I've told you is everything I know about it so far. So I have to go back home and start writing the outline. So very early stages, but I'm curious to see how that goes. It'll be the first actual big support product for both Mal and Pugmire, and hopefully it does very well. And the last thing we want to talk about before we go into questions, we do have an hour and a half for this panel, so we got a little bit of time left for questions.
34 minutes.
Huh?
I said, so we have 30 minutes.
Right, so we have an hour left.
Yeah. Perfect.
We also just signed, very close to signing, one of those two, a license agreement with Caliber Comics. And with that, we are going to be doing a game based on their Legend lore comic, which is formed with the Realm. And you want to talk a little bit about kind of how that came about?
Yeah, the Realm and then its follow-up Legend lore were originally published in the 80s. It's moved around with a couple of different companies, including Image, and it's now owned by Caliber Comics. I've worked with Caliber Comics on various projects for the last 10 years or so, and we had bounced around ideas that some of their comic worlds would make really good games, and Eddie, Rich, and I had bounced around, talked about several of the properties for a while as to which ones we thought would be a good fit. And
I wanted Sherlock Holmes Dark Detective.
Legend lore really stood out because there's a lot of media, Jumanji, The Magicians, the old D&D cartoon where people from Earth go into a fantasy realm and go on adventures.
Yeah.
And we thought that would, with the current popularity of Dungeons and Dragons, it was a way for us to explore the OGL in a new way and offer a different kind of story.
Yep.
So we've brought Steffi Devon as the developer, mm-hmm. and she's working on the outline and building a writer list right now.
Yeah, and it's fun because it's a new kind of 5e sport book. I mean, we already have the Starlands, which is great for kind of, here's a fantasy world that gives a new edge and flavor, but this is like different in the sense that it has all that, and you can play it just as an engaging fantasy world, and that is a really interesting, intricate fantasy world, but also that component of what happens when people like us are put into that, and what happens when elements of our world occasionally impact the world. Like there's one arc in the comic, spoilers for a 30-year-old comic, where they find a crashed plane, and that starts to set up changes as they reverse engineer that and how that impacts the society. So I think it's going to be a genuinely interesting gaming experience. It's a great potential license, and also I think it'll be a good addition to the 5e canon, as it were. So we're all really excited about what the potential of that game could be. Again, early days, we're still at the... She's still writing the outline, but already we've got some fantastic ways of how to implement bringing you or someone very close to you into a game world and how that would work. So that's all the stuff we have on the announcement side. So again, we have time for questions. Do you guys have more as we can cover?
You went first, sir.
Yes, so exalted question. Now that we've got a couple splats almost out, I was wondering if you talk a little bit, what I've seen is very promising about how you're navigating the tension between making each splat its own individual game with its own themes versus having them be appealing to the wider fan base. Like, I know Sidereal's first edition was, to me, I thought it was great that they made a game just for me. And then in second edition, it seemed like they kind of like, in the name of making it a game everyone could play, they were like, well, of course, who wants to play a game where you use supernatural powers to file TPS reports?
Right.
So what I've seen thus far from Dragonblooded and Lunars is very promising, so I was wondering if you'd talk a little bit about how you approach that.
Because I've only been on the team since February and I haven't been doing much of the design, I'm going to let Neil Price answer this question.
Okay.
Because he knows a lot more about what the design's been going into it for the past years than I do.
So, Stephen Lee Shepherd and I, who are both in the Slack, like to play Who's Been a Fan of Exalted the longest. We both pre-ordered the limited edition core book back in the day, the first edition, and we're both like, well, I was talking with the first edition developer on the alt.games.white wolf. I was looking at the crappy White Wolf forum with the orange font and the black background. we've read every Exalted book. We have seen the progression of it, and for Sidereals in particular, we are both really want to harken back to both, you know, first edition, and Robert Advance have a big vision of bringing in some of the elements of very early first edition and early portrayals of Sidereals before they were kind of completely revamped for their actual core book in the name of making them more accessible. The big issues that you kind of highlight in both Sidereals, but in also stuff like Lunars and dealing with the wild, they all need kind of purpose-built solutions. There's no one, you know, magic bullet or moon silver bullet, if you will, that'll actually solve the whole thing. Lunars have problems where their big play area is the wild, which has, let me put it this way, it's had mixed implementation, and mixed results in that implementation. Some of it's been excellent and very evocative, and some of it's just like, great, fish swim in the air. Awesome, that's what it is. Okay. So, you know, we're really looking at ways to make both avenues of play more engaging there, but always harking back to the core experience of running around in creation and doing things with other results. And sidereals are going to be a tough nut to crack because they have the resplendent destiny and they have the separation from other exalts as part of their core identity and as part of the alienation that makes them bond with other sidereals. So we're aware of all of that. Now, how do we install it? But we're going to take a crack at it. So.
I think being aware is the most important part because we do, like, I said this on podcast, I said it in panels, I'm not ashamed of it. Exalted was like the only White Wolf game I had never played when I took this job. So when Rich came to me and said, hey, can you do all the Chronicles lines and Exalted? I went, maybe. I've been reading up on it. I'm super excited about the line now. I love it way more than I ever thought I would. I also love the team a lot. Watching all the conversation on the Slack, there are times when I go away for 2 hours to record a podcast and then I come back and it's like, you have 230 unread messages on the Slack. And I'm like, what are they talking about? And it's almost always, how do we make this game better? And how do we make this game to where people want to play it, but also to where everybody's happy with what we do? I've been super impressed with Dragon Blooded and Lunar so far. And I've been impressed with all the other stuff that I can't even talk about right now. So hopefully that'll, you know, continue and forge momentum. And I'm hoping that Sidereals is everything I want it to be, because honestly, like I said, as I've learned about it, as I've gotten really into it, they've become like my number one favorite. So yeah. Next question.
So when are you guys gonna be making Street Fighter 30th anniversary?
You know, I'll answer that seriously.
I have an actual real question.
On the subject of Street Fighter and any other video game license, the main difficulty is actually getting in touch with the people who control the license to distribute to role-playing game producers.
And that's the case also someone who speaks English that we can talk to.
Yeah, and speaking frankly on Street Fighter, I've been in touch mostly on a personal basis with Capcom Legal for Capcom USA, because they are the people in charge of the Street Fighter license rather than Japan. But yeah, you know, there are so many video games that would make fantastic RPG licenses. A lot of them with Capcom games like Resident Evil, Monster Hunter, all sorts of things. So really, in a lot of ways, it takes that kind of company reaching out and saying we want to go in this direction, or for a very fortuitous, hey, I know a guy who knows a guy who works here, so that you can make that connection. That's not to say Onyx Path would leap on a Street Fighter license, but we are always open to entertain offers or suggestions if there's a way to make it happen.
Because he said 30th, I'm picturing one of our like 20th anniversary like leather bound,
but
Street Fighter.
But with a fist. out the front.
Yeah,
like the old SmackDown.
Exactly.
There
nice
wrestling.
One thing I'll say though, I can't say a lot about it, but Matthew and I have talked with Rich about a product that is kind of an homage.
Mm-hmm.
Street Fighter, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So we're not, it's not entirely out of our heads.
World Darkness Combat.
So you had another, good lord,
yeah.
No.
I do have a little more real question.
Yep.
Some of my favorite books, and it's Exalted again, the Shards of the Exalted Dream, and I've also liked some of the kind of spells that y'all did with Chronicles of Arthas as well.
Yeah.
They love that.
That's something that you're going to go into with Exalted again.
He's been working on Exalted for 10 years. I've been working on Exalted for 4 months. So it's way easier just to kind of be like.
So Exalted 3rd is pretty big, and we're expanding out all the time. And Shards is really kind of a book you do at the end of an edition's life cycle when you want to explore different avenues and different opportunities for it. Some of the ideas in Shards, I am a quietly, or actually not very quietly, lobbying some of the team to adapt.
Do you do anything quietly, Neil?
No, absolutely not.
There we go.
There are some really good ideas in some of the Shards books that I think actually work better than the main ideas in the main books. Stuff like infernal sounding phylacteries, stuff like alchemicals, growing their own charms, that sort of thing, I think are actually really excellent ideas that should be part of the core vision. So I wouldn't be surprised to see stuff up ideas from Shards migrating into the new edition, depending on how loud I get. But, it's probably going to be, at the end of the edition's life cycle, that you would see another Shards book doing other things, just because there's so much ground to cover in third edition creation, there's so much that goes to already.
Yeah, we are doing setting books. We have a lot of things planned. We have a lot of books about, various religions, all kinds of stuff going on. So you're going to get a lot more setting over the next few years. But we do almost at this point have like a 5-year plan for Exalted. So hopefully we're not near the end of this edition cycle. I will say, though, because you did mention Chronicles, I just edited a really awesome book by Danielle Lazon, who developed it, called Guide to the Night for Vampire the Requiem, that is lots of those kinds of things. It's got space vampires.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. What's really
I am super into it. I have messaged Danielle while editing it, going like, when do I get to play space vampires with you? Please tell me, because this sounds amazing. It's got all kinds of cool stuff. So other lines might still be doing that, but as far as Exalted right now, yeah, it'll be a while.
Yeah, the alternate settings concept is something I've definitely been thinking about for stuff like Scion, because in our companion, we have a sort of variable setting dialer depending on how open you want the gods to be, how powerful you want them to be, how much present you want them to be in the game. So there's going to be a sort of make your own shard dial in the companion. And I've had a bee in my bonnet that I've spoken about publicly before about doing a Mad Max and Into the Badlands style Scion crossover.
I'm already working on that game, thanks.
Yeah, it's called Stiffy Rise
Again. Yeah. It kind of got already snatched away from me.
You never had it, Neil.
That was the plan the whole time.
I'll be back.
I just want to say, with Danielle and John, we've got Dave Brookshaw here as well. Anyone who has any questions, providing they're happy to answer them, regarding their various game lines, we have Deviant represented here, Mage of the Awakening, we've got Vampire the Rogue, and we do seem to have a room full of developers.
There's a lot of Trinity happening in here.
Yeah.
Lots of it.
By all means, ask away, and your experts may be able to answer.
Next question was where? I'm going to take a first.
That you and the game have been kind of piecing together our 2.0 chronicle with our kind of stuff is they've had people ask about changing breeds. I don't know if that's a thing that's going to like live in 1.0 forever, or if that's moving forward if we're going to see the 2.0.
Oh, so it's that's certainly a possibility. With Wealth of Forsaken and its attached books, I don't think it's so much true that we are going to be gauging by the popularity of Shunned by the Moon, which is coming out, in which direction to go with Wealth of the Forsaken. It's no secret, there are big pillar games in Chronicles of Darkness that have a massive swathe of fans. Wealth of Forsaken is probably middle in the entire, I guess, ensemble of our games.
Right.
So we do need to gauge it from one book to the next. That's why with Shunned by the Moon, we are really pouring a hell of a lot of effort, a lot of attention into this. We want it to be almost the Chronicles of Darkness bestiary, because this is going to contain content that you could use for any Chronicles of Darkness line, which is why we put so many damn monsters in it. But if that does well, then certainly Changing Breeds and other books are the kinds of things we want to entertain. So it's not off the table, it's just not on the plan yet.
Mummy question.
Oh, okay.
How is this edition tackling the, let's say, difficulty of cohesive mummy culture, which 1E had some problems with? Like, I wake up and I'm... now suddenly know all the culture in and outs, but I don't have memory. And this problem of multiple mummies working together.
Without knowing each other. Secret magical forehead tattoos. Well, no, that was World of Darkness. So that's a perfectly good question. We are intending for mummies, if they've been in the same Moret. When the ritual, the rite of return, was initially formed in Irem, in the Nameless Empire, it's likely that the sacrifices that were made were of groups of mummies. You weren't slain alone. And what that allows is for you to have this constant companionship throughout the ages, so you can recognize the people that died with you. You have a somewhat symbiotic journey through Duat. Everyone's travel is their own, but when you come out the other side, you can embrace and you know what each of you have been through. So in terms of it was a pervasive but fairly minor issue that every storyteller work their way around, that you wake up, you don't know anyone around you, but it's clearly the players' characters, and you're just going to have to come up with a reason for why you're working together now. That's exciting the first couple of times. That excitement drops off every time you have to justify how it works. So, yeah, we have various in-game reasons for why that now works. Does that answer your question? Or
mostly that, and the issue of you got here, the group coming play was also like, here's these guilds, they're eternal, you don't have memory, you sort of remember your membership?
Well, that's, I guess, branded into your Sekhem. You were killed and brought back for a specific purpose. And if there's anything resonant in your memory when you wake up, it's what your judge wants you to do. The purpose for your coming back, it may be tied to your guild when you come back, it may be tied to your decree, it could be a specific edict that your judge has given you. But more often than not, the general feeling you have, like if your cult brings you back, is your guild, because that was a very large part of your life way back when.
I'll tell you first. Sorry.
I have a question about Victorian Mage.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, because obviously it's Victorian. It's mainly me about, the British Isles.
No.
Okay. No.
So it's going to be like all of Europe?
It will be all of the world.
Okay.
The Victorian era is really interesting, because when you hear Victorian era, you think of corsets and tea and, England and sitting around.
Right,
and
you suck.
Nobody can. Right, exactly. However, first of all, the British Empire at the time was huge and world-spanning, so we're going to cover the whole British Empire. But we're also covering things like America, which, that's Wild West. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I haven't memorized the outline yet because I was handed it by Phil, and I'm going to kind of tweak it a little bit. But it does have sections on every single continent in the world. So it is the Victorian era, but it's not. You can only play in England. Yeah.
The sheer number of revolutions that are going on around this time in Italy and South America and Central America is fantastic. It's brilliant mage fodder. But something that I don't know if it's clear, it's going to be a big book, but it's not going to be a rule book. This isn't V20 Dark Ages. We're not going to be plugging all the combat systems and things like that. Well, this is a supplement to Mage 20, but it's a big supplement.
Yeah.
And are we going to be seeing, the order of reason? Because at that point, they're becoming the...
All of your favorite traditions and anti-traditions will be present.
You are also definitely going to see, like I said, it is more of a setting book.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of, see Mage 20, page this with this mechanic. But it's really, it's setting heavy and it's a lot of fun. We're going to try to be realistic about the time period, but we're also... I'm intending to put a lot of little sidebars and things in there that's like, yeah, this was really sexist, so you don't have to play that way. It's okay. Play your own version of the Victorian era if you just don't even want to deal with that. But if players do want to deal with that, like if you have to go to a certain club and women aren't allowed in, are you going to disguise yourself or do that? Mm-hmm. Like, that's fun too. So it just depends on kind of which way you want to go with it. So
avatars do not discriminate about who they awaken within. So it is a nice broad spectrum of playable options.
Exactly. Jennifer?
You mentioned that you're going to use Amazon for a more broader publication than only to drive the RPG and with the upcoming Chicago by Night book for 55. I was wondering whether it will be available to normal retail, like just Modiflus or something similar.
You can probably answer, but I imagine Studio 2 and Indie Press are almost guaranteed.
It will at least be distributed via Studio 2 and Indie Press Revolution, where distributors and retailers can buy from them.
Yeah.
And we're exploring a lot of distribution options, especially for all of our tentpole books, which
mostly are core books, but not exclusively. So there are certain supplements that will, Victorian Mage is...
And Chicago probably would be a temple.
Certainly one on my
Chicago
list.
Chicago, yeah.
Chicago and the Victorian Mage book, for example, are books I'm looking at putting into distribution. So.
And yeah, as I didn't, as this is the only panel I've not mentioned on, Chicago will be the introduction to the Clan La Sombra in Vampire 5th edition. So if you're some hateful scum that likes to play La Sombra, because I can't stand those bastards, that's the book for you.
I look forward to having you on board.
He brands himself as a gentleman. I just wanted to throw that out.
Well, that's because I'm a Ventru, and if I enjoyed the La Sombra, I wouldn't be a very good Ventru, would I?
Enjoyed it.
Any other questions? Well, that's okay, Jennifer.
Maybe another question, because that's eight plants, that's five to go. Where will the other plants be?
Well, that's largely going to be down to White Wolf. I don't think... Well, I think I can confirm... The Banu Hakim, which is the official name of what was once known as Clan Asamite, will be in the Camarilla book that White Wolf are doing. The Anarch book, I'm not going to confirm which clan is in there, but I believe there is a clan that's going in there. We've mostly finished that book, we're just tweaking some things. But that, of course, leaves a clan of which you're very fond, I know of, the Giovanni, there's still the Ravnos, and there's still the Zimitsi. I would be amazingly surprised if when White Wolf get around to the Sabbat book, the Zimitsi are not in it. But as for the Giovanni, I have some plans percolating. I know I'm fairly confident where I would put them. So, and that isn't in the ground, deep in the ground. I'm a big fan of the various
net. Yeah.
No. Cast to the four winds. But no, you know, if I had my way, you would steadily get resurgences of all the favourite clans. The Salubri will make an appearance somewhere, I have no doubt. But the Giovanni, I've got a fair idea of where they and the other various clans and bloodlines of death should appear. And it shouldn't take too long. Any other questions?
Let's go.
Okay.
So I've read that Spilled Blood is going to sort of be the like Bloodlines book for Requiem. Is that going to be like a full collection, or is that going to be...
it's actually a Nightcrawler's book. There are some Bloodlines in it, but that's not the only thing in the book. It's only a single chapter. There's 10 Bloodlines that will be presented in that book. There has been a pitch for another, like an actual full bloodline book, but it's not going to be the kind of bloodline book that you're from 1E, where it's just like a stack of 20 bloodlines, each, you know, 5 to 6 pages with some information and some mechanics, and here's some bloodlines to play, kind of things. Instead, it's going to be more of a exploration of what a bloodline is, how bloodlines get made. Kind of exploring who belongs, like how you get the bloodline, what does it bloodline mean, and then with some examples of the various types of bloodlines and how they come about at the end of each chapter. So that book maybe will have, I don't know, it's not even outlined, and I haven't really talked to Nixie about it very much, other than she sent me kind of the blurb about it. But it'll have some example bloodlines, but it's not going to be a stack of like 20 bloodlines. And then we, like, you know, can encourage, you know, bloodline formation. Like, I know that our Paris books have a couple of bloodlines that are going to get printed in them. Am I allowed to?
Yeah.
Okay. like, the bronze bloodline is going to be brought back from first edition in Dark Eras, and I know there's another bloodline. I don't know which one it is yet. I haven't looked at it. So, but there's definitely bloodlines that will come up in other books as well. We'll do that one bloodlines book, and I don't think we're going to do another. So bloodlines will then just kind of show up as single things for other books. There may be a bloodline in it. And that's how we'll handle it. So, does that answer your question?
Definitely.
All right. I think you had another question.
Which question?
I'm so glad all my
Tumbleweed. Bong. Bong.
There's a book later coming on, Tome of the Pentacle, I believe.
Yeah.
How much of that is going to deal with what I find more fascinating than the other players, magical law, and how much on dueling?
Magical law is really one of the things that we try to do with Awakening Second Edition is. Awakening, Matthew talked earlier about how some of the lines have a lot of books for Chronicles and some of them don't. Mm. So it's no secret, like Mage and Valhalla are the two Chronicles lines that have the biggest game lines. And we've really done magical lore. We try to, you know, we already have Sanctum and Sigil and the Silver Ladder book, which I think really go over the Lex Magica in a lot of detail, and then the Major Core book has a summarized version of it. So Tome of the Pentacle is about the Tome of the Pentacle is going to be about the view of Mage Society that we haven't had yet, which is it's less about one-on-one Mage dueling as interconciliar diplomacy and convocations, the history of the Pentacles and alliance, and how mages actually go to war. Like, what happens when there is a flashpoint and the Pentacle actively starts fighting the Seers. That kind of thing. Hopefully, if we can fit it into the... Because I don't know how long the book is supposed to be. Because I have ideas for books, and then Dixie goes, 97,000 words.
So. I just don't need... I don't need both my major developers to write triple the length books every time they have a book. One is enough. Wouldn't that be great?
So I pride myself on like being able to... I'm having a cool book that you can lift with one hand.
it's a rare trait these days.
Word count permitting, Tome of the Pentacle will then have like a look at probably the biggest, most complicated concilium in the setting, which is the New York setting that a lot of Mage's fiction is set in, which has like three separate Silver Ladder caucuses who are all fighting one another. It's an example of a very, very large setting, and Tome of the Pentacle will have things like, I don't know if you've ever read Damnation City for Vampire, which has like tables of long lists of like quick and easy, like you have run into a random person on the street, hero,
encounters.
It's like that, but for mages, so the storytellers can fill out big concilium scenes. Things like, this is a Morris who's obsessed with this, that kind of thing. Like, here are a whole bunch of cabal themes for just like ease of running political games. So, does that answer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
We've got time for one last question, I think. So someone make it a damn good one. This is, I think this is our last panel. So the pressure's on. Come on.
So was the publishing of VTM 5 that kill the 20th edition lines?
That is a good question. It doesn't
kill.
Like what? What is already dead? Yeah. It's. Effectively ends the 20th anniversary Vampire line, and that's a purely pragmatic approach because people will very rarely continue purchasing a previous edition when a new edition's out.
Yeah.
It just would not be cost effective for us to do it. The other 20th anniversary editions, as explained, are still going to be getting books as and when it makes sense to release them. So it will be interesting to see, again, speaking I guess as a businessman, how the other 20th anniversaries continue to do now that V5 is out. That's something we're going to have to weigh up. But V20, the capstone was Beckett's Jihad Diary. That leads directly into V5. And by the way, if any of you don't own Beckett's Jihad Diary, you're missing out because both Neil and myself developed that. We both wrote on it. There, we had a fantastic team of writers, and it is a beautiful book.
Your editor was crap, though.
Oh, the editor, yeah, I can't remember who that was, Dixie. It was Dixie. She was all right. It was a very clean draft to begin with. Anyway.
Yeah, all of Neil's work is really clean.
Yeah. Yeah. Woo. That one chapter.
Oh.
Of a 26-chapter book. Anyway.
The rest of the time I spent developing them.
Yeah, yeah, I vaguely recall. But
to be fair,
I
also stole some handwork and used this here too.
It's true, I did.
Yeah, this is going to end in a fight.
So every panel, right,
yeah, this has been building up for this entire
game. As the bridge leaves, it just gives the chaos.
The table will be flipped in Neil's face.
There's a wrestling reference.
Yeah. We may actually have time for another. A disappointing epilogue question.
Yeah, one more quick question.
A disappointing epilogue question. Someone asks something really obscure. Okay, Jennifer, it's on you.
With the convention of Chicago being the Chicago Van Ouch book.
I can neither confirm nor deny. Okay. But if you have specific requests, maybe, regarding the convention of Chicago, come to me, contact me, and I would love to hear them. Anyone who wants to talk vampire, I'm at the Onyx Path booth all afternoon, and whether it's this edition, previous editions, I'm around to talk about it.
So thank you guys very much for coming.
And we're back. We're back again. The panel is over, and if it sounds like we're slightly exasperated, it's because of the sheer hell we've been through with our recording software, trying to get all three of us recording at the same place in the same time. So if one of us drops out, probably me, it's because I've been shoved headfirst into the bin. As it's either been working that I've been able to hear Dixie, or Dixie's been able to hear me, or Eddie's been able to hear me, or I've been able to hear Eddie, but not all three of us at the same time. So these are the kind
but
of
we
trials.
We can now.
Right, yes, yes.
Currently,
let's
right
focus
at the second.
On the misery of the past, and instead look forward to the greatness of the future.
See, it's not that Matthew's been interrupting all this time, it's that he could never hear us the entire time.
Yeah, I assumed it was a one man show.
I mean, yeah. But at least we were trying to test all that out. We did get to listen to some Hall & Oates courtesy of my phone. So that was fun.
It was surprisingly decent quality considering you were playing it from your phone over a microphone.
Was it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually pretty good.
Cool. Mm.
Well, anyway, I suppose we should talk a little about what we just listened to, the panel.
Hall & Oates?
Not
Hall & Oates.
What a world you
get. And on that note.
Sorry.
No, is there anything you want to add, Eddie?
The cheering next door was wonderful.
Yeah, it wasn't in our
from a
room.
Recording perspective, but from a reinforcing perspective, that was
yeah,
nice.
All those cheers were not technically for us, except that people did clap when you said I was developing Victorian Mage, and I was kind of like, I'm surprised by this, but thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, every now and then somebody would say something and it would get punctuated by the applause next door, which was kind of annoying in the room, but kind of funny on the recording to me because it just sounds like we have the most awesome, excited crowd.
Yeah,
of
right. Mummy the Curse as an audience we never knew existed. And that bodes very well for second edition.
They were doing that whole like clap thing that, you know, I was like, I don't even know what's going on in the next room. Did anyone go to the next room and see what was happening in there? Because I never did.
No. It's just a mystery. Let's leave it as a mystery. It's a
okay.
Theater of our minds.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Cheerleading convention.
So well, with that as the case, then, I hope you've enjoyed the What's Up with Onyx Path panel. You're a little excited about some of our forthcoming releases. And by all means, if you have any specific questions regarding any of the books we've mentioned in the course of that panel, please leave a comment either on the podcast itself on Podbean or elsewhere, or on the Onyx Path blog when this goes up. Because we always check those comments, we like to respond to them, and likewise, as we've requested time and time again, and we will continue to request, please review, please rate, please recommend to your friends, share the podcast, let it find its legs, because this is one of the best ways we have of letting people know about the excellent things we're working on, and the kind of fun, easygoing crew we are.
Well, I mean, what I like about podcasts in general is that you don't have to sit down and, like, read the blog for forever or go through the forums. Like, if you're going to the store or you're in your car or you're going for a jog or whatever, like, cleaning the house, like, you can listen to it there. So yeah, it's a really good way to get some information without having to devote time to seeking out information on what we're doing.
Right, and the more you guys support us and allow us to continue making these podcasts, the more opportunities we get to force Dixie to crack up inconsolably during the podcast.
Yeah. I have no idea what I said that was so amusing, but...
It was some combination of everything. I don't know. It's just you, Matthew.
It's the Matthew experience.
Yeah, I try and maintain a serious newscaster tone, and there I have one of my co-anchors just giggling hysterically at me like I'm in some lunatic asylum.
You should see me watch the Gentleman's Guide to Vampire videos. I'm just rolling the whole time.
Just think, you're on a Ty Dillinger of the podcast.
Oh, I like that. Yes, I am rated 10. 10, 10. That's a wrestling reference, Dixie.
Thanks.
You have been remiss in your references to Sailor Moon that you promised in the first episode.
It's true. It's harder to work in, I think, than... wrestling references.
Believe me, that Ty Dillinger
reference. We have to work on that a little bit in the future. Also, Matthew is gone! Ha ha! Skini kawate, I'll shuck ya! That means the name of the moon, I will punish you, by the way. That was Sailor Moon coming down to smite Matthew off the podcast, which is exactly what I've always wanted.
I don't think you two can hear each other right now because you're both talking at exactly
I can't hear Matthew at all. I thought he died because his whole thing was... Okay, so this is Matthew's back now.
So if you want to find us on social media, I'm just going to tell you where to find our main social media. You can find Dixie on Dixie Cyanide, Dixie, like your first name, Cyanide Poison. Matthew, you can find at ClickBang, or Gentleman Gamer on YouTube. You can find me just about anywhere at Eddie Fate, EDDYFATE, or EddieFate.com. This has been the Irish Pathcast, many worlds, one Pathcast. What Dixie didn't realize is that I actually was also recording Matthew's dialogue, so here's this special blooper reel of what Matthew was actually saying when Dixie and I couldn't hear him.
Believe me, that Ty Dillinger reference was about the most shoehorned in wrestling reference Eddie has put in, so it isn't that challenging. I'm the Ty Dillinger in that I job a lot. You know, I lose these arguments. I come out looking strong and proud and calling myself a perfect 10, and yet somehow you two just roll over me.